Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and it's my privilege once again to be joined by Frank Spearing, the author of Who Killed Polly? About the Polly Klass Case, published in softcover by the Monterey Bay Press, and copyright 1995. Frank, welcome back to our airwaves.
Well, thank you, Dave.
We have been talking about some of the very disturbing aspects of this very disturbing case, Frank, a case that got a lot of publicity, but a case which did not publicize the, again, fascinating and disturbing details that you have brought forth in your very important book. Now, we've talked about the anomalies in the accounts of how the kidnapping took place. We've talked about the discrepancies in Richard Allen Davis's situation. He mentioned nothing about any accomplices, yet it appears he had some. He appears to have been working for money. It's not clear where the money was coming from. He was stopped by police both on the evening of the abduction, and yet police didn't seem particularly interested in that or the fact that he was drinking beer or was a paroled felon. He was later stopped for driving under the influence of alcohol, the same curious behavior on the part of law enforcement. He then confessed after having finally been arrested, said that he was just all messed up on drugs and that that's why his memory was kind of hazy and it accounted for some of his aberrant behavior. And yet a drug test proved negative. He appears to have been living beyond his means. And we've also discussed the fact that both his Polly's father and grandfather said that they believe she had been abducted as part of a conspiracy, and that Polly does not appear to have been the kind of girl who would have sat back, or young woman, I think would be a better way of describing her, who would have sat back and allowed this sort of thing to have taken place without putting up a struggle. Next point I want to get into, Frank, in this second part of the interview, are the curious aspects of the forensics. Now, eventually, long after Richard Allen Davis was arrested and, quote, confessed, unquote, note the quotes, the body, ostensibly that of Polly Klass, was discovered, and there are a lot of questions about that. Could you tell us about that?
Well, first of all, her body was discovered supposedly. Now, I say this all supposedly because this is only the reports we get from the FBI. No one has ever seen her body. In fact, the family of Polly Klass was never allowed to identify her body. No one's ever identified her body. Supposedly was identified by the FBI laboratory in Washington, D.C., and that took 6 weeks because they had to have some special expert who was in Bosnia at the time fly in to identify it.
Why do you suppose that was done?
I think it was to stall for time. I don't think they knew exactly what to do. Basically what they had done was this. Davis had been left out there for 2 months, and he'd been left out there because they knew where he was. But this gave them an excuse to come up with what they would call a body. And this gave it time for the body, quote-unquote, to decompose. Where they found this so-called body was in a place called Cloverdale in Northern California. I've been there. Let me explain to you what it is. It's like a yard. It's a little field right off the main highway. This area is, there's people in and out of there all the time. There was a little girl who had been in there looking for different things, sticks and flowers. She maintained she'd been around a little creek area where they found the body on top of supposedly on top of a bush where it had been left. There are trucks in and out of there doing construction work. This is a heavily populated area. Supposedly laid out there for 2 months, this body, and no one ever saw it, right? Now, the thing is that Davis, of course, the other part that I always kind of was amused by, a photograph or seeing this poster of a drawing, called the FBI and said, here's where you'll find this man. They never identified who there was that gave the tip, but they found Davis living with his sister and his brother-in-law on an Indian reservation in near Ukiah, California, which is fairly close to Cloverdale. Supposedly Davis took them to where the body was and admitted to them that he had done this. Now, this is a hardened criminal. Doing this. Suddenly he's very open admitting he did all this, and here's the body, and he was just very open with them. I have trouble believing that. But nonetheless, they so-called find the body. They maintain they identified it, and I was very, very questioning with the head of the FBI on this, and also Sergeant Meese. They said the major thing they based it on was the dental. Now, the thing is that I've talked to a lot of dental experts, forensic experts. Children at that age, they have much better nutrition, of course, today, and hygienics. And the children don't have the cavities that they once had. I mean, unless you have a missing tooth, which Polly didn't have. And x-rays generally have a tendency to be somewhat blurred. So it's hard even to tell one child from another with just the normal situation. With Polly, all that was left supposedly was part of a jaw, which makes it, I would say, even more difficult to determine that this, in fact, was Polly Klass. They said the rest of it was just bones, and they couldn't really identify too much. This is why the family was told that they were not would not be allowed to see the body. They were given Polly's or whatever remains of whoever this was to the family. They were given a dust, supposedly remains had been cremated, which was spread over Monterey Bay later on in a funeral ceremony. We have a situation where the FBI from day one has controlled every bit of evidence. They were there 5 hours, as I said, after the abduction. 18 agents, actually 16 agents, and these agents literally controlled everything. And the APB was never sent out. They maintained later they found a handprint of Richard Allen Davis on Polly's bedroom door. Now, I don't know if you're aware of the expert with the O.J. case, who is the chemist, Frederick Whitehurst,
mm-hmm.
and maintained that the FBI manufactures evidence for prosecutions and had done this in 150 cases.
We're going to get, by the way, he was not allowed to testify in that case.
That's
either.
That's correct.
We're going to get to the functioning of the FBI as an institution, and I mm-hmm. think there are some of the most important questions in this case, and perhaps a hint as to what sort of authority might have been involved in this act. It comes from the way the FBI was apparently bent to the will of the perpetrators. But going back to the actual forensics, now here we have a body that's discovered in Cloverdale mm-hmm. in a well-traveled area, and yet nobody had seen it before.
That's correct.
And this is again in
a case... Which the perpetrator, the kidnapper, just leads them to and never thought about it, you know?
And this, again, is in an exceedingly high-profile case, and this is in an area that was well-traveled, and yet nobody had seen or, what is perhaps as relevant, nobody had smelled this decomposing body.
That's correct. And no one has ever to this day seen this body that we know of except the FBI.
And the body was supposedly identified from dental records, which is not a good way to identify a deceased child. Yet the lower jaw was missing.
Yeah.
Part of the skull was missing.
Yes.
The body was too decomposed to mm-hmm. be fingerprinted.
So they say.
Mm-hmm. And now we are also, one of the most fascinating details about this case concerns the fact that apparently the parents never saw the body. In other words, the parents of Polly Klass have never identified this body.
No, they've never seen it.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is that there's a lot of situations, there's a lot of things here. Now we're getting into areas that get very disturbing. Why didn't they demand to identify the body?
Mm-hmm.
Why were they put off by law enforcement and by the FBI? Then the next question I have is, then why did the Klass family, Mark and Joe, change their story about there being someone else involved with Davis? That's totally forgotten today.
No, I certainly haven't. It has not had, it has not made any of the coverage on the case.
Not
there's
at
been
all.
A lot of it.
And there's been plenty of time for them to bring that issue up.
Now, the autopsy was conducted by a specialist who was brought in, or allegedly conducted by a specialist brought in from Bosnia.
That's correct.
And again, could you perhaps detail for us your hypothesis as to why that would have been done?
Well, it's a good story anyway. I don't know if he was brought in from Bosnia or where. I know it took 6 weeks, so this may have been the excuse for taking so long. I think the FBI has moved very slowly in this case because what they've attempted to do is to keep it a secret for as long as possible, hoping that the public will either lose interest or lose, you know, specific ideas or questions that they may have had. My book, Who Killed Polly, unfortunately for them, raises these questions. And I will continue to raise these questions because I feel it affects not only America's Child, which is the Polly class was called, but also a lot of America's children who, in situations that are similar to this, and they're disappearing at a tremendous rate, these little girls across the country, these things could be happening. I think that it's very important for the American people, instead of being afraid of this subject, should be awakened to it. It doesn't mean anything, I guess, until it happens to your child. But I'll tell you something. It can happen. If it can happen in a place like Petaluma, hometown America, as Ronald Reagan called it, it can happen anywhere. And this is something that all of us have to be awakened to. And what I've attempted to do is, by asking these questions, and I don't have the answers for everything, but I'll tell you something, they haven't been answered in the courtroom, and merely by having this verdict and sentencing of this man, and having a judge who very flagrantly and arrogantly stated the purpose of this trial is not to educate anybody, by doing that, we are not doing justice. We are not protecting our children. And this is a sad thing in this country when we don't protect our kids.
We're going to talk about the larger implications in just a few minutes, but we should bear in mind now again, the pretrial hearing was closed to the public. What was the ostensible reason for that?
There was no reason given. The judge just, they even barred the family from it. Joe Klass said to me, "What are they hiding, Frank?" And that's been the case all the way along. What are they hiding? And, of course, what they were hiding in that thing was, of course, the discovery in terms of the body and the confession, which no one ever found out anything about except what they were given finally in the end by the FBI as evidence. Everything has been covered up from day one. And it's unfortunate because we have a situation here that this little girl, I don't say she's, Polly Klass is still alive. People have asked me, well, you think she might still be alive? She might have been sold. What could have happened to her? Well, I do know that there's been eyewitnesses that I've spoken to that have seen American girls in brothels in Saudi Arabia with yellow doors, little girls who are 12, 13 years old, 11 years old, scanty little dresses. Men go in there two and three times their age. And these little girls, you see little girls around the back, and they're all doped up. They turn them on the street. Out on the street a year or so later, they're dying of AIDS, or they just die. And I have eyewitnesses that have seen these little girls. I know that according to Nancy Spiegel, the U.S. attorney, and Bill Dworn, who's the head of the LAPD Juvenile Division, that little girls are being murdered and tortured on videotapes and sold over Internet. This is a big business.
We're going to get into this frightening underground economy, if one could call it that, in just a couple of minutes. Now, one of the most disturbing things about the case, and that you brought out in your book, and that is the functioning of various law enforcement agencies. We've touched on the local police and their curious behavior in stopping Richard Allen Davis, who was a paroled felon, was, quote, sightseeing, unquote, on a private road after midnight while driving around drinking. This occasioned no special interest on the part of the officers. Later, despite the proliferation of composite sketches of the suspect, which looked quite a bit like Richard Allen Davis. I won't say they're identical, but there was a fair resemblance. Yet CHP stopped him and arrested him for DUI, and there was no attempt to correlate that with the search for Polly Klass. Now, you have mentioned already the strange behavior of the FBI in regard to this case. Now, from the beginning, recapping some of the things we've already touched on, there was a formidable FBI presence in connection with this case almost from the outset.
Yes.
Could you detail that for us again?
Well, the night of Polly's abduction, within 5 hours, there were 16 agents of the FBI who arrived on the scene. That next morning, more arrived, and they took over the Petaluma Police Department, which is a small little department. They put in two huge vans with equipment in the back of the office, and by the end of the week, they had 50 FBI agents. Now, over the next 2 months, they maintained they could not come up with a clue, they could not come up with any evidence or any suspect. I asked the head of the FBI at one point, I said, you know, I don't understand. I mean, this man was out there 2 months. He fit every element of your VICAP survey.
Now, what is the VICAP survey? You touched on that earlier.
Violent Criminal Apprehension Program. It was developed by a man named Robert Rensselaer for the FBI. And what it is, it's primarily to find serial killers, anybody who has a violent background, because they match different things. In other words, it's they match what they know about the guy, and then they match all known felons who might relate to that kind of thing. It's pretty easy. And, of course, this fellow related to every aspect. The age was the same that he was described as. Certainly he was had kidnapped before. Twice he was convicted for kidnapping. I mean, there are various things. But the big thing is that he certainly should have been a suspect, just even living in the area. They maintain they never even, head of the FBI was funny, he said to me, well, yeah, I think he's funny, but he says, you know, well, I'm sure we'd have found him eventually. I mean, it's unbelievable, you know, because, in any other case, they'd have found him in 20 minutes, because he fit everything, see. But the thing is that they never, ever claim that they ever found him, until he was turned in by somebody on a tip, a person, an anonymous phone call, which has never been identified. All of this is anonymous business, and the fact the body, a family could never see the body, and the fact that the police let the guy go because they didn't know that he was a felon, and the fact that, it just goes on and on. The APB never sent out, you know. I mean, it's just like one thing after another. And I believe there was a much darker hand involved here that put a stop each step along the way to evidence being released, to the story ever coming out.
We're going to ruminate about the possibilities of that dark hand, if not who it might have been, at least what type of executive authority might have underlay this particular crime. Going back now to the behavior of the FBI, a couple of points that I'd like you to bring out in your book. One, a noted Bay Area private investigator named Hal Lipset was going to come in on the case, and yet he was discouraged from doing so.
Well, he wrote me a letter. He read my book, and he said, well, who killed Polly? He said, raises questions that must be answered. Hal is a very famous private investigator, and has been out of many years. He was hired by the Polly Klaus Foundation to find Polly. They paid him $5,000. And Mark Klaus and he were, the first week, were put in a room with the FBI, and the FBI said they would not cooperate with him in any way. And then they turned on Mark Klaus and said, you know what's going on from the beginning. You were involved in this thing, and they demanded that Mark take a polygraph test.
That Mark Klaus take a polygraph test?
Now, that's very important.
Why, in your opinion, was he required to take a polygraph test?
Because the FBI was stating that he was lying, that every step along the way he had been lying, that he did know what happened to Polly. You see, this was the way of them putting it on Mark.
So it is your opinion that they suspected Mark Klaus of being disingenuous about his
things.
More about, we're going to attempt to discuss what might have happened here in a couple of minutes, but again, going back to the behavior of the FBI, again, the Federal Law Enforcement Agency, Barry Collins, you point out that Barry Collins, a defense attorney in this case, was he a public defender?
He's a public defender. He used to be a cab driver from Brooklyn. He's up there in Santa Rosa. He told me, he said the body was planted. I said, who planted it? He said, you find out.
Now
he never brought that out in the courtroom, you see.
All right, but he also mentioned that more than 2 years after the beginning of the case, long after Richard Allen Davis had been apprehended and confessed, the FBI was still investigating the case. Why do you think they were doing
that? What are they investigating?
Indeed. One of the things that I think looms large in this case, and I think the discrepancies in the official version of the case, the curious omissions, the curious behavior of judicial and law enforcement authorities ranging from the local police right on up to the exceedingly formidable FBI, raises a great many questions about what actually was going on. And it certainly appears quite clear, Frank, from the account that you've presented, that there was a whole lot more going on than the public was told about. Now,
yes. And there still is.
Well, there certainly still is. Now, one of the things that is important, tying in your research with the general line of work that I engage in on this broadcast over the years, I deal with international fascism, misdeeds of the national security establishment. This type of work is often demeaned as conspiracy theory, a term that I feel is unfair. One of the stumbling points for a great many people who are not versed in this type of work as they begin to take a look at some of the things that have taken place in the United States and elsewhere over the years. And that is a lack of credulity on their part, an unwillingness or inability to believe that institutions such as the FBI or the CIA or the military or the White House or the National Security Council could engage in some of the things that they have engaged in. There's a book about President Kennedy's assassination, for example, called Farewell America. It's by a fellow who wrote under the name of James Hepburn. It appears to have actually been released by French intelligence. It's about the assassination of President Kennedy, and they point out with regard to the FBI, or they maintain that with regard to the FBI, that in regard to President Kennedy's assassination, for example, that the special agents in the field had not only investigated, but had successfully investigated President Kennedy's assassination by the evening of 11-22-63, that they had the whole conspiracy doped out. They had it on the desk of J. Edgar Hoover by that evening, and yet, at least according to this account, it was J. Edgar Hoover who, in a sense, delivered the bureau to the conspirators. I think that's
your key. That's your story. See, the idea is the FBI has their own agenda, and supposedly is to protect the nation, national security. But it really has always been their own type of agenda, and a lot of what they do is based on informants. They don't investigate as much as they get information from other people, and they use this information for their own needs. One of the things that I discovered through someone I spoke with the law enforcement in Sonoma County, and this is a person that I met who's, I cannot give you his identity because I promise not to, is that this case, now this you can take for what it's worth, but Polly's abduction, he said, was a payback against Mark Klass because Mark Klass had been an FBI informant of some sort. Now, I don't know if this is true. I don't want to go any further than that necessarily, but I do know anytime I've confronted Mark Klass, he's run away from me these questions.
Okay, now I just want to state, this is not to say that your informant is necessarily incorrect, but I want to stress for legal purposes that I have no information in that regard, and so I have to formally disclaim that, not only on my part, but on the part of the stations that will air this interview. Again, that does not necessarily mean it's incorrect, but I have no information, nor do any of the stations that air my program have any information.
Well, I'm just using explaining one of the rumors that did go out.
Right.
Now, we're talking about what you ask why the FBI would do it, why these law enforcement agencies would do it.
There is a point. Excuse me, Frank, for interrupting, but there's a point I wanted to finish, and then I think the work that you've done here will at least head a willing investigator in the right direction. The point being, with regard to the FBI or the CIA or the military or the National Security Council, there are many, many fine men and women, honorable patriots and people of high integrity involved with these institutions. And yet, despite that, the institutions themselves will often be complicit or involved with things that are unspeakably evil. The point is that people engage, people join FBI, CIA, whatever, DIA, NSA, as a career. And the old bureaucratic and professional edict of going along to get along often obtains. One, say if you're with the FBI and I'm an employee of the federal government, you want to make it to GS, whatever, or with local law enforcement. You want to be successful in your career, and if one rocks the boat, that can often be inimical to that. Now, the point with regard to the functioning of not only the FBI, an extraordinarily powerful institution, but also local law enforcement and the courts, is that they were, as institutions, and this is not to cast aspersions on any judge, on any individual local police officer, on any individual FBI agent, but that these institutions were co-opted and corrupted by the executive authority, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
And that when one is considering the possibility of the FBI, itself an extremely powerful institution, being corrupted by whoever or whatever was the executive authority in the kidnapping of Polly Klass, it indicates, it points us in the direction of some very powerful elements.
Well, children are our greatest resource in this country. They shouldn't become our greatest commodity. When you use children, I don't think anything is defensible, whether you're the FBI or whether you're a policeman or whatever. When they cover up facts, which they've done in this case, that could have led people to discovering the truth. Who hired this man? That's real important.
We're almost
That's
out of
what
time.
We've talked about all the way through this.
Indeed.
And they won't even discuss it.
Now, Frank, we're getting very low on time. I'd like to go back to a couple of points that you made earlier. You were talking about things that I've also discussed on some of my programs, things like kiddie porn, the making of snuff flicks, white slave trade, child pornography. You mentioned that among the markets, I guess one could say, for young American women or / girls is Saudi Arabia. Could you go back to that?
Yes. Well, I have eyewitnesses that have seen these little girls in these brothels with yellow doors, and it is, as I described to you, where these children are kept there, and that's the end of them. No one knows, and no one has done anything about it. I don't know if it's because of agreements we may have with the Saudis. I don't know if we have what kind of agreements this country has entered into with different people around the world. I don't know what's behind all of this child pornography. But I do know that it does involve heavy-duty money, and I think that the FBI, for some reason, at least in the case of a Polly Klass situation, is withholding evidence, withholding information, and law enforcement up on the line, from what I could find out, is doing the same thing.
Now, you mentioned, too, that in addition to the Saudi Arabian market for young American girls, basically who were turned into slave prostitutes, and then who once they get too old for this sort of thing, basically are turned out into the streets to
Well,
die.
After about a year, they're dying of AIDS or something, you know. I mean, it's horrendous a 12-year-old child is used that way.
Now, you mentioned the possibility, and again, we're very low on time, of at least one of the things you looked into was a possible satanic connection to some of this.
Yes, well, that was brought up very early, because the Satanists are related very much in terms of finding children today, and what they do with them. There's a fellow named John Cummins, who's the head of the National Bureau of Missing Children, who's really a specialist on this, and he's located in Washington, D.C. And he's discovered that a lot of these kids, they're being sold for their organs.
Mm.
In other words, when people need a kidney or this or that, they steal a child. And there's big money, and the Satanists are very much involved with that.
And there's also something that I've talked about, which is the overlap between some satanic cults and the intelligence community and Nazi elements. I tell you, Frank, we're almost out of time. Again, I think we can assume that the vast majority of law enforcement officers, local police, and FBI agents would like nothing better than to bring a child pornographer, a child molester to justice, and yet...
Well, they're the only ones that can.
We've witnessed very powerful institutions being bent to the criminal will of whatever powerful authority, in fact, underlay the kidnapping and murder, question mark, rape, slave, sale of a Polly Klass. We have been speaking with Frank Spearing, the author of Who Killed Polly, softcover Monterey Press, copyright 1995. That's all we have time for. Frank, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, David.
For Frank Spearing, this is Dave Emery saying thank you, thanks for listening, and so long.